This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Pastoral Medicine, Lecture 4. Dear friends, today I would like to insert into our studies a chapter of anthroposophy that does not need to be presented to the general public in such detail. But we need it here for our examination of healthy responsibility and pathological irresponsibility, as the physician and the priest must know them. First of all, it is important that we look into the question, what is really inherited by a human being? What is not inherited and must come to the human being in some other way? In judging healthy and ill human beings, a great deal depends upon whether one can differentiate between these two, may I say, ingredients of the human being. The human being comes out of the spiritual supersensible worlds into the sense world. That means he combines what is given him by heredity with what he brings with him from earlier earth lives and life between death and the new birth. Then we see how he develops as a child, from day to day, from week to week. But if one does not perceive that he is a four-membered being, with physical body, etheric body, astral body, and ego organization, one is not in a position to understand his development. For then one does not see what part each member is playing in his development. They have different origins. They come from different worlds. First, the human being has his physical organism. The most striking phenomenon in the physical organism is this, that in the first period of his life, he has what we call his first teeth, which last until the time we call change of teeth. I would like to say that the teeth are only the most obvious thing that has changed at this time. But the fact is that the human being only keeps the physical substance which he received at birth until the change of teeth. He is constantly stripping that physical material from his form. The process is, of course, more complicated than is implied in the brief statement that in the course of every 7 or 8 years man pushes off all his physical substance and replaces it. The fact is near to that, but one need only look at the change of teeth itself to realize that such a picture of the process must be somewhat modified. For if this abstract assertion were correct, we would have new teeth every 7 years. We get new teeth only once. The teeth are one of the things that are changed once and do not have any other renewal. They belong in this category in the most extreme sense. As a matter of fact, the course of human life is such that the older a man becomes, the more he retains of his old physical substance. A replacement of, by far, the greatest part of the substance does indeed take place in 7 to 8 year periods, but we must distinguish what remains behind. At the 7th year, it is only the new teeth that remain. After each subsequent period, there remain also certain parts of the substance that are not replaced, although the greater part is indeed replaced in the course of 7 or 8 years. Thus a basic statement can be made for the first 7 years. A human being strips away all the physical substance he had when he was born, keeps none of it, keeps only the forces that have lived and worked in it during those years. These forces have so appropriated the fresh, new substance he was constantly acquiring that at 7 his physical body has been completely renewed, even to the teeth. And from that statement, dear friends, the understanding must follow that the principle of heredity, as our current natural science conceives of it, really holds good only for the first 7 years of life. It is only true for those first 7 years, that the characteristics which a human being carries in him have come from his parents and grandparents. The physical body of those first 7 years provides, in a certain sense, a kind of model from which the artist working in the human being, who consists now in these years of etheric body, astral body, and ego, fashions a new physical body. We see how what he brings down from spiritual worlds, his individuality, his own being, and what he receives from heredity work together, may I say, in artistic reciprocal activity. If the human being is an inwardly strong individual and brings with him an intensely strong inner astrality and ego nature, which in turn makes the etheric body strong, then we will see a young person shooting up who, from his inner strength, keeps very little to the model, only copies it for his general form. Naturally, the universal human model must be preserved, and therefore an affinity is already there for the inherited human form. Features of it definitely remain beyond the change of teeth. Still, to thoughtful observation, it will be apparent that in the case of inwardly strong individuals, important changes come after the change of teeth, because such individuals follow only slightly the model they inherited. If we investigate such an individual, as the one of whom I have already spoken, Saint Teresa, we find that these particularly strong individualities resemble their parents very closely in the first 7 years, but then in the 9th and 10th years they develop in ways that surprise one, for then the real individual is emerging. In the strongest sense of the word, heredity only holds good for the first life period. What seems to appear later as heredity is not really heredity, but must be recognized as a copy of the model that was inherited. The copy may be more or less exact. Even so, it is not heredity. It is a copy of the inherited characteristics. The ordinary natural scientist considers this to be simply the principle of heredity carried further. But someone who really studies the nature of man will perceive that there is a complete difference, qualitatively, between the resemblance to parents before the change of teeth and the resemblance after the change of teeth. Before, the forces of heredity are active. After, the forces that copy the model are active. To be exact, one can no more say that a human being has inherited what he carries in himself between change of teeth and puberty, then one can say of an artist copying the Sistine Madonna in the Dresden Gallery that his painting has caught the qualities of the Madonna through heredity. It often seems as if this were believed. You can see the particular kind of work the etheric body has to do. For in the years up to the change of teeth, the astral body and ego organization participate very little in the work. The etheric body forms a new physical human body in accordance with the model. Why does it do that? This is an unusual question, because one can't address such why questions to nature. It can only be a rhetorical question. By what does it do that? The etheric body does that because, like the child during his first 7 years, it is not yet able to receive other than a very special kind of impression from the outer world. Here we come upon an important secret of human evolution, a secret that answers the question, what does a child really perceive? The answer lies far away from present-day ideas. You will see what I mean if I present it in the following way. Man lives, shall we say, between death and a new birth, or conception, in the spiritual world. Plate 3, above. In the spiritual world, he is surrounded by realities very different from those found here in the physical world. He comes out of that world, whose laws we might indicate by this line, white, into the physical world, yellow, and continues his life in a physical body which he receives. Now, in this physical world, the same forces work further, although they are hidden from human sense perception. They are here, red. If you look at a tree, dear friends, the same spiritual forces are working in it as those you encounter between death and a new birth. Only they are covered over, veiled, by the physical material of the tree. Everywhere in the physical world in which we live, between birth and death, spiritual forces are active behind the sense-perceptible physical entities. We can think of the activities of the spiritual world continuing into this world in which we live between birth and death. Now, it is truly so that in the first 7 years of human life, the child cannot unite his whole being with anything except this spiritual reality in all the colors, all the forms, all warmth, all cold. The child is fully aware, when he enters this physical world, of the continuing spiritual activity. This awareness gradually diminishes up to the change of teeth. A sense impression is quite different to a child than to an adult. This fact is never recognized. To a child, the sense impression is something entirely spiritual. For this reason, as I said in the pedagogical course, if a child sees his father in a fit of anger, he is not conscious of the angry gestures, but of the moral state behind the gestures. It is this that goes over into the child's body. During this time, therefore, the child is working with the forces that build his physical body in accordance with his model, the body that will now be his own. And during this time, he is turned entirely towards spiritual foundations. He works out of spiritual forces. What does that mean? What is really working when spiritual forces are working? Obviously, colors, forms, warmth, cold, roughness, smoothness work upon the sense perceptions. But behind all that, what is the fundamental force that is working? In reality, whatever has something to do with an ego nature. Only invisible spiritual beings make an impression on the child. Beings who have something or other to do with an ego nature. Above all, beings of the spiritual hierarchies higher than man, but also the animal group souls and the group souls of the elemental beings. In reality, all this is working upon the child. And out of these spiritual forces, out of these mighty spiritual dynamics, he forms his second body from the original model. It grows and is finally there as a complete second body when the change of teeth takes place. That is the body that the human being has built for himself since birth, the first body that is his very own, a physical body built out of the spiritual world. Thus you can see, we have in this first life period very special laws working within all that activates the child, in all the awkwardness, all the uncertainty that are in his soul and with which he moves. They come from the fact that constant adjustment is having to be made to the physical world, since the child is still immersed, dreamily, half-consciously, in the other world that surrounds him, the spiritual world. Someday when medicine will have reached a proper spiritual outlook, one will see in this interplay between the spiritual and physical worlds during the first 7 years of life the true and profound cause of the so-called children's diseases. Then we will have the explanation for a problem which today is solved in the medical books by empty words. Just words, formal elucidations that do not lead to any reality. The etheric body has plenty to do in these first 7 years of life. It works quietly and steadily to develop the faculties that it will then possess in the second 7 year period, independent faculties of memory, leaning rather toward the intellect. Whoever has an eye for it can see the greatest transformation in the child's soul life when the first life period goes over into the second. The etheric body is now relieved of the work it had to accomplish, in the full sense of the word, to build the second body. It is relieved, freed. How it is freed, one can only realize if one perceives that at 14 years, not only the teeth remain, but still more that had to be renewed, like the teeth, in the first life period. This now remains in the physical material substance. What remains frees the etheric body, itself becomes free in the etheric body. Quantitatively it is a small thing, but qualitatively it is something of tremendous importance. It is what now becomes tremendously active as soul attributes, soul characteristics. What the human being saves by not having to create a third set of teeth, and much else that is taken care of by evolution in the same way as the teeth, by this means something of the etheric body is left over, in quotes. What flowed during the first 7 years into the physical development and is now left over from the physical development works now purely in the realm of soul, its nature depending upon the individual human being. With the faculties upon which you call as teacher in school, the faculties you train, the child accomplishes the great change from milk teeth to second teeth and much else. With the forces the child saves, by not having to form a third set of teeth, he begins to develop soul faculties. This takes place in the depths of human nature. These soul forces had been entirely embedded during the first 7 years in the physical development. We have to comprehend the physical development as a soul spiritual activity, just as much as a physical activity. We see a spiritual entity active in the body in the first 7 years of the human being, in the fullest sense of the word. Now, how does that relate to our general human evolution? Well, you see, those forces with which the human soul works in the first 7 years of life are in the cosmos. They are sun forces. It is not only physical etheric rays that stream down from the sun. In those physical etheric sun rays, forces are streaming down from the sun that are identical with the forces by which our etheric body renews our physical body in the first 7 years of life. It is the sun being, Sonnenentität, that works there. Look at the child, how he works at his second physical body, copying from the model. He is absorbing pure forces from the sunshine. One must understand that, how man stands within the cosmos. And when he has certain etheric forces released at the change of teeth, as I described to you, they then work back upon the astral organization and ego organization. Then man is accessible in his second life period to what could not reach him at all in his first period. He is now accessible to the moon forces. The etheric forces in the first 7 years of life are sun forces. At the change of teeth, man becomes accessible to the moon forces. These are identical with the forces of his astral body. Thus, at the change of teeth, the human being moves from the sun sphere, in which, however, he also still remains, for it remains active in him, into the moon sphere. And now, between change of teeth and puberty, the human being works on himself with the moon forces. With the moon forces, he now builds his second own body, his third earthly body, in which not so much is replaced as was replaced in the first life period, but even so, a great deal. Again, forces remain behind, but they are now of an astral nature, and they are now transforming the soul. They were freed from their work on the body when the human being reached puberty. The human being has now reached a life period in which he manifests certain forces that are now free in his soul, forces that had had to work in his physical body between 7 and 14. So we work entirely in the first life period with what comes to us from the sun, and with the schoolboy, between change of teeth and puberty, it is sun forces that have now become free for his soul activity. That is the great, powerful fact we find in human evolution, that if one is educating a child's soul between change of teeth and puberty, one has to do purely with sun forces. The child's soul is so intimately related to it, lives in the sunshine. One's heart can rejoice in such knowledge. The knowledge really sheds light on the relation between man and the cosmos. Moon forces are active in this second life period in the bodily development. They are not yet freed for the soul life. They become free at puberty, and then they join the work on the soul. The change that takes place in the soul life at puberty is caused by the fact that moon forces are now impressing themselves into the soul life. So, what a young person does in all kinds of behavior after the onset of puberty is a working together of sun and moon forces. Thus we see into the depths of human evolution. We will stay clear of speaking of heredity in the crude sense in which natural science speaks of it. We will look in the opposite direction to see what lives in the human activity of the child. It is the sun that lives in all the human activity of the child and in his human thinking. It is the sun that streams to us from the stone, for a stone has no light of its own. It can only reflect the sun's light to us. The natural researcher grants you that fact. But, dear friends, that is the very smallest, the most abstract detail. The child also reflects the sun forces back to us between his 7th and 14 years. Just as we can designate the light reflected from the stone as sunlight streamed back to us, so we can designate what the child does in his second life period as sun. Sun is not merely there where it seems to be concentrated. This physical notion that the sun is only there, plate 3, left, is like the notion of a fellow who looks at the soup in his soup bowl and sees a blob of fat floating on the top of it and thinks that the blob of fat is the soup. Yes, our physical ideas are often very childish. And if one uncovers them and shows them for what they are, then people laugh. One could wish there were the same reaction to much that is happening today in the name of science, for it is pretty laughable. When the fellow takes the blob of fat to be the soup itself, that's the same as when that gold ball up there above us is regarded as the entire sun. In reality, the sun fills the whole world. Now, let us look into the connection between the moon forces and the forces of reproduction. For the forces of reproduction now gradually form the child's own second body that is built up between the 7th and 14th years, and is finished when puberty begins. The human being takes in the reproductive forces during this time. This is plainly moon activity. These forces relate entirely to moon activity. They are the result of moon activity. And now the human being reaches the life period in which he must form his own third body, the fourth when counted from an external view. The time from puberty to the beginning of his 20s. The division of time in the later years is no longer so exact as the time between change of teeth and puberty. Now there is always more physical substance remaining behind. It stays fixed in the human being. It becomes permanent structure. Gradually there accumulates a great deal of permanent structure in him. The older he becomes, the less material is stripped away from the bones and replaced. Also, in the rest of the organism, certain parts need a longer time to separate off. And one can see a simple fact in connection with the teeth, that once one has got one's second lot of teeth, whether one still has them later depends upon how long they last. Just as with a knife, one only has it as long as it lasts. The knife can't renew itself. Teeth can't renew themselves either, really. Obviously, everything is in flow. There is renewal in the first place, but then it goes over into the state of non-renewal. The teeth maintain their life process at a much slower tempo than the rest of the organism, so far as intensity is concerned. But therefore, in reverse, the tempo is faster, so far as quality is concerned, for they actually become bad before the other parts of the organism, for the reason that the other parts can always renew themselves. If the teeth were subject to the same laws as many other parts of the human organism, there wouldn't have to be any dentists. On the other hand, if the other parts of the organism were subject to the same laws as the teeth, we would all die young in this modern civilization of ours. And then, probably, this part of Switzerland, where they say that dentists are so busy because people's teeth are so bad, would not be so fully populated, for it would be in bad repute as a place of early deaths. That's how things hang together. But now you must go on. The human being is active in his organism in the first 7 years of life with the forces of the sun, in the second 7 years with the forces of the moon. In this second period, the sun forces remain, and the moon forces combine with them. In the third 7 year period, from puberty into the 20s, much more delicate forces are taken in, coming from the other planets. Now these other planetary forces appear in man's growth process. And because they work much less strongly than sun or moon, their influence upon him is outwardly much less visible. They had been working in his body between the 14th and the 21st years, and now at 21, it is hardly noticeable, but they begin to work in the area of soul and spirit. Whoever has insight can see this remarkable change. Up to that moment, only sun and moon have spoken out of human deeds. Now, planetary forces modify that sun and moon activity. Actually, people's coarse methods of observation afford very little sense for grasping this change, but it is there. You must realize that for someone concerning himself with the human being in health and in illness, a knowledge of these connections is necessary. For what do we really know of a human being, shall we say, in his 11th or 12th year, if we don't know that the moon forces are working in him? But now, how does it go on from there? After that period, even though there are continually fewer parts to be renewed, still the human being must renew them. Now, you see, up to the 21st, 22nd year, sun, moon, and planets are working in succession into human growth. Then from the 21st to the 28th year, the constellations of the fixed stars work. To be sure, this escapes ordinary observation. Only mystery wisdom tells of the entire zodiac playing into the human being between the beginning of his 20s and the end of them. Then the world becomes severe. It no longer wants to work into man. It becomes harsh. Of this strange new relation of the human being to the world in his 28th, 29th year, that the world hardens toward him, of this today's science hardly knows anything. Aristotle taught it to Alexander when he told him, "Then man pushes against the crystal heaven and finds it hard." Thus the crystal heaven, beyond the sphere of the fixed stars, acquires meaning for human comprehension. And one begins to realize that when the human being comes to the end of his 20s, he finds no more forces in the cosmos for his own renewal. Why do we not die then at 28 years? Well, the surrounding world does in fact let us die at 28. It is true. Whoever sees man's relation to the world, whoever looks consciously out into the world, must say, "O world, in reality you sustain me only until my 28th year." Only when one realizes this does one finally begin to understand the real nature of the human being. For now what happens to him when the world withdraws its formative forces, forces which previously he had always been free to use to build himself up? What happens now? The following happens at this remarkable moment when the human being in his 28th year begins to show clearly that the earlier forces of growth are now completely gone. Some people begin at this very moment to die off. Some hold on a little longer to the forces of growth that are flowing away. But even Goethe had grown smaller when he measured himself carefully. This was when he began to work again on the second part of Faust. But earlier he had already begun to fade. You see, from that moment when the world deserts us, we have to manage our renewal ourselves, out of forces we have received up to that moment. Certainly when the parts of our organism that can be renewed are becoming fewer and fewer, we cannot work to give ourselves a new body in the same glorious measure that the child works up to the change of teeth, when he is forming his first very own body from the model. But we have collected many, many forces from sun and moon and stars, which we are carrying within us, and which we need when at 28 we have to begin to renew our physical material body ourselves. This is the moment in earth life when the human being finds that he is now given complete responsibility for his human form. This moment of his life when he is put entirely on his own is the point of time toward which he has been striving and from which he must go on, the moment to which I was pointing yesterday from quite a different aspect. Plate 3, middle. Man strives, if I may so describe it, from childhood, when he is receiving many cosmic forces, strives more and more toward a point lying at the end of his 20s, when he no longer builds his growth out of cosmic forces. Whatever he does after that moment, he does from forces out of his own body. Here, in the middle, is the point at which man stops working with cosmic forces and begins to develop forces out of his own body. Parenthesis, this point is not distinguished so clearly in actual life as it is here in the diagram. Close parenthesis. We often find a premature activity happening in some child from forces out of the child's own body. We become aware of it from certain pathological symptoms the child shows, from the bones, for instance, becoming brittle, and particularly from a child's becoming fat. But the connection between these things is not easily seen. In every moment of his life, Man is either striving toward this 28th year point or away from it. You must realize that it is a kind of zero point, a kind of hypomokleon, a zero point in time when we stand between ourselves and the world. Always in our inner dynamics, we are striving toward it or from it. Whatever is happening in us is a striving toward a zero or away from a zero, something we do toward or away from nothingness. We are striving toward the point where the world is no longer active, and we are not yet active. Between the two conditions is a kind of zero. There is something in us that is oriented toward nothingness. It is that that makes us free beings. That is why we can hold responsibility. It is rooted in the human constitution that we are responsible free beings. Because at the moment of transfer from the world to ourselves, we go through a point of zero. Just as the beam of a pair of scales goes through a point of zero from right to left, from left to right. And that point does not follow the laws to which the rest of the scales is subject. You can think when you have a pair of scales, plate 3, right, here the mechanical laws which we have learnt are in force. Here the mechanical laws are in force. This gives the scales an exact form, either this above and that below, or the opposite. That is the law of scales, the law of leverage. You can carry the scales around. Their relation remains the same everywhere, subject always to those mechanical laws wherever you take them, except at this point. This point is free. You can carry the point around as if it were not connected to a pair of scales. The scales remain unchanged. And so it is when man takes hold of himself in his soul experiences at that point toward which first he strives, from which afterward he strives away. First the world is active, afterward man himself, and here nothing is active. With the tendency toward and the tendency from, here where a hypomokleon sits, here can live freely that human capacity which is determined neither by nature nor by the world. Here is the point of origin of man's freedom. Here is where responsibility is born. If, therefore, one wants to be able to judge the degree of responsibility in, for instance, a person 35 years old, and I mean professionally, not merely a layman's opinion or that of a dilettante, then one must ask oneself, has too much, perhaps, worked over from this person's abnormal development up to the point at the end of his 20s? Is the point moved more toward youth or more toward age? A person is properly responsible if the point is normal. If, judging the whole man from his external life, one can decide that the point is normal. If it lies too far back toward youth, that is, if the world ceased too soon to give its forces to some person, one may perhaps find that the person suffers easily, even though to a small degree from compulsive ideas, that his soul is becoming rigid and he cannot be held fully accountable for his deeds. If the point comes late, the question will be whether that person is hindered by his inner nature from developing complete freedom of soul, whether he is too rigid physically, and for that reason cannot be held fully responsible. The physician and the priest are the ones who are really competent to form this judgment, in the finest sense of the word. They will know that they can judge pretty accurately from a person's appearance what his development has been, whether he is in balance, whether one can say that his life hypomokleon is at the right spot, that is, at the right point of time, or is too early or too late. We will discuss the person's physical appearance later, for even an intensive study of physiognomy belongs to pastoral medicine. These are the things that in the old mystery wisdom were regarded as very important for judgments of human life. They are things that have been forgotten and that must be brought again into our knowledge of the human being, if that knowledge is to have any beneficial influence, if it is to be active in the right sense in medical and pastoral activity. More about this tomorrow. The end of Lecture 4.